Hey, everybody. We are the Lesser Scots, and we're here talking about ASP.NET. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited. We're back here, and I'm not sick, even though I've been sick the last 2 years. If you go back and look at some of the other great content that's still very valid that we did on ASP.NET in the past 2 years, you will notice that I am sick in every single one of those. I am not sick today. Let's hope that that lasts. We're going to talk about what's new in ASP.NET 5, and we've got my boss, Scott Hunter.
Yes,
how are you?
I'm here.
I'm pretty excited. All right, cool.
I'm super excited. This ASP.NET 5 is awesome.
So. Yeah, ASP.NET 5 is going to be awesome. It used to be called vNext. Now it is ASP.NET 5.
Yeah.
Right? Let's take a look at the slides. All right, so what's ASP.NET and why? Let's talk about who you are first, right? You're the director of program management. So you manage all of ASP.NET and more now, the tools.
Yeah, so our team is called the Azure Developer Experience team, and that team builds ASP.NET. It builds all server-side.NET, really. So Entity Framework, WebCF is in there as well. We build the Azure SDKs. We build the Visual Studio web tooling. We build the Azure Cache, and we build NuGet.
Mm-hmm. And you're the director of program management for all of that?
For all of that, yeah.
All right, cool. And you worked on Wildcat BBS, which is pretty
awesome. before there was internet, there was modems.
And that was you?
Yes, 300 baud.
V32 bis. All right, and I'm Scott Hanselman. There's a slide about me. You can go and Google me with Bing, and check that out. All right, so what we're going to
Google you with Bing.
Google me with Bing.
Okay.
Yeah, lowercase g, uppercase b. So let's look at some of the course topics that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk with Scott Hunter about why ASP.NET 5 and what it is. Talk about what .NET Core is and put that all into context for you. And then we're going to have Dan Roth come over, and we're going to get really, really deep into MVC6 and how we brought everything together and reconciled those things. We're going to then talk with Syed, Visual Studio Tooling. We're going to look at some of the things that make Visual Studio some of the things that Visual Studio layers on top of the runtime. So basically calling out the difference between Visual Studio and the tooling and ASP.NET and the runtime. Pardon me. Then next, we will talk with Louis Desjardins, and we're going to do internals of and deep dive into. Let's go to the next slide for me, please. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, ASP.NET internals, talk about KVM, KPM, what those things mean, hosting and Kestrel and what cross-platform and how that'll work. And then we will have Rowan Miller, talking about Entity Framework 7 and what's new, basics of EF7. Okay, so let's set some expectations. So the assumption is here that you are a web developer with some familiarity. I would say this is almost like a 101, 102 level kind of a thing.
Right.
You can spell ASP.NET. You can go file a new project. You've been maybe working with ASP.NET for
a while. You've been building ASP.NET, in the last couple of versions of Visual Studio, 2012, 2013.
Right.
If you've been using one of those, this will bring you up to speed on what we're going to do for the next version.
Right. We're hoping to basically set context for the next, couple of years. What is moving forward? What do we have with web forms, with MVC, with web API? What's coming on the desktop CLR? What's going to be in the core CLR? And put those into context.
Right.
And then, some basic understanding of C# and HTTP and things like that. So this is just the expectation. We do have some MVA points for you. If you take a look there, ASP.NET vNext is the code. That'll get you 50 points for this event. If you're going to take a screenshot, now is the time. There you go. You just took a screenshot. Join the community. Check that out. All right. So why ASP.NET 5, sir?
Yeah, so let's kind of roll back through the history of ASP.NET, kind of talk about where we are now and what changes we're kind of making.
Mm-hmm.
So ASP.NET's been around for about 18 years now. We started with classic ASP. It wasn't called classic then, but it was 1996. We went to fully object-oriented with .NET in 2002, and that was a major change, and we're about to make another major change. Each of those, from 96 to 2002, that was kind of a major shift, and in 2014, going from ASP.NET 4 or 4.5 to ASP.NET 5 will be, again, another major shift, and we can kind of drill into...
It looks like almost every 6 years or so, some big shift happens. I remember in 1996, I was teaching ASP.NET at Intel to people, and I spent 40 hours explaining five objects, you know, request, response, cache, session, application. And that was really difficult for these C++ people who had never thought about a stateless internet to understand. And then we'd spend 40 hours doing that. And then 6 years later, I would spend time explaining web forms and view state and things like that. And this took 40 hours.
Yep.
And then 6 years after that, I went and explained model view controller. And those three concepts took 40 hours to explain. Is this as giant of a revolution?
It is. Yeah. It's as big as a change as we've ever had before. So we considered it a resetting of the platform. We basically rebooted the platform. And we'll drill into why we're rebooting the platform.
And maybe call out the difference. Like, it's not necessarily at the web framework level a complete, because there's concept compatibility.
Right. If you're using ASP.NET for the last, 10 years or so, a lot of those concepts are still going to be there. As you said before, model view controllers, those are still going to be there. Mm-hmm. If you want to write a controller that returns some JSON, that concept is still going to be there. The same notion of having caches and session state and stuff like that are still going to be there. But we've rebooted the base of the framework.
Okay, so the underneath part is what's changing fundamentally.
Right.
We'll talk about that. But should people panic?
No, you should not panic. So it'll be a transition, but I think you're going to get a lot of benefits from your transition. We're trying to address a couple of key things. Like one of the biggest things we hear from customers all the time is, can I use the latest version of ASP.NET on a server? And typically, you have to go ask your IT, and your IT says, well, we're not going to put .NET 4.5 on the server until 2015. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of limited by that. And one of our goals is to reduce that by shipping the framework as part of your application, meaning you can put an ASP.NET 5 app on any machine or a memory stick, and it does not affect the machine. There's no registry. There's no GAC. There's none of those concepts. There's no System 32 files that you're going to go modify. This thing completely runs out of its own folder, so it does not require administrator to install something on the machine to run. And that's a fundamental change that we're trying to make. Mm-hmm. If we want to jump back to the slides, we can kind of talk about what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about there's now two .NETs in some ways. There's .NET 4.6, which is the big framework, mm-hmm. and there's the core CLR, which is a subset of that. And the subset of that is what we use if you're going to build the side-by-side, I'm going to install the framework as part of my application. That's a smaller or a subset of .NET 4.6. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't contain WinForms or WPF or WCF or workflow. A lot of things that as a web developer you don't need are not there. The goal was to shrink .NET down to the smallest possible thing we could build, mm-hmm. and then add everything back in with NuGet packages.
Okay, so there's the desktop framework,
yeah,
4.6. Then there's the .NET core framework, which is kind of like the server profile almost.
Right.
Okay. So you've got the jitter and the CLR and the essence of what is
base .NET. Class libraries, mm-hmm. strings, arrays, lists, all the generic stuff is going to be in there. And we're trying to keep that as small as possible and not become huge like the .NET 4.6 framework has become mm-hmm. over all those times. And the idea would be, instead of making the core framework big, make it really small, and then you as a consumer can add in the bits that you want. And so you kind of make your own framework in a lot of ways.
So it's opt-in entirely?
Completely opt-in.
Okay. And we talk a little bit about that in the next slide.
Yeah. And we can just jump here because I think we're going to cover these topics in the next slide. Mm-hmm. And these are the bases that we're trying to do on these slides, being modular, which we'll drill into as well. But the idea here is giving the developer more control. Today we give you a bunch of functionality and you have to you can't really opt in or out of it. It's just there all the time. And so we're going to let you opt in and out of all that stuff. We want to make it easy to make an app and move it to the cloud. Today you can do that. Scott and I have done a ton of talks on building an ASP.NET app and publishing it to the cloud. But if you really want to scale it and do some of that stuff, you need to know some tricks. And we're going to try to make those tricks not required anymore.
So basically a framework that knows about the cloud.
Exactly.
Because when we say the cloud, there's this simplistic way of looking at the cloud, which is hosting elsewhere by some big company. But the cloud is less, it's more sophisticated than that. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it. There's lift and shift, hey, look, the cloud is a fancy word for hosting. But for me, the cloud is elasticity and scale, it's statelessness, it's storage.
Exactly. Push your app to the cloud and then drag a slider to say, I want to run on three VMs. Mm-hmm. That's what's not automatic today in ASP.NET. If you drag the slider to three VMs, your app may work and it may not work. And,
that's
something that's there. Mm-hmm. Back to our slides, we're going to go back and talk about, we have a faster development cycle. So instead of having this compile, you know, change, compile, refresh your browser, we're going to do more of a model where you just save your changes, refresh your browser. Mm-hmm. We're going to kill the compilation step completely. Use your own editors and tools. We'll drill into that. But now that we actually have cross-platform capabilities, we need to let ASP.NET work great with editors outside of Visual Studio. And then we want to be fast, and we'll kind of drill into that stuff. So let's look at these slides. So first thing is, as I was saying earlier, we want to have a lot more agility. And some of that is faster development cycle. So if you want to use the latest version of ASP.NET, we're going to make it easier to do. Now, because we can ship the framework as a package and ship all the features as a package and not affect your machine, we can move faster. You can try it faster on your hardware and take advantage of that. Also, we want to give you more control on things like patching. Today, every Patch Tuesday, once a month, we, Microsoft, send out some patches. And those fix bugs in the framework. Fixing bugs in the framework might break your application. And I'd rather give you more control of how this works now. So what we're going to do is we're going to say that we only patch major security bugs via the Patch Tuesday. There won't be any like framework changes or small stuff anymore. Only the big, massive security bugs. We typically have one of those every year or so. Mm-hmm. So that means we're not going to push very many patches to you as part of that. Another benefit of this is today, if your server's at one patch level and your developer machine's at a different patch level, your code's not the same code. You're not running the same platforms. In this new world, because you're shipping the entire framework as part of your app, you can always be guaranteed that the same code and the same framework you're running on in your developer machine is what you're actually going to run in production. You never have that question of, why is it not the same? What's different there?
You know, that's really an interesting point and an important thing to kind of drill into a little bit. I just literally yesterday was on Twitter talking with someone who said that the exact same code was running one way on their development machine and used this much memory. It used three times more memory in production, and they had no idea why. And when we started digging into it, there's the code that they deploy, but then there's also what's going on in the global assembly cache, what modules get loaded up into memory. It became quite a chore for them to, you know, do a diff, a categorization
right.
of all the different things that were running and figure out, oh, there's one file we didn't think about in the GAC, and the only way to do that is by doing a dump of the modules in memory and production.
Super hard to do today.
Yes. Not a problem in the next version.
Not a problem in the next version. You can basically say, this is all my files, and these files are the same on both the server and the developer machine, and they're completely in sync.
Even your own private version of, if you wanted the compilers, the Roslyn compilers, the .NET CLR, and any patched libraries, whatever you want.
You know, because we open source .NET, you could actually build your own framework and copy your own framework up there as well. So, I mean, you have full control now. The other cool part of this is it means the developer now has the chance to opt into our new features. So it used to be in the past that, we couldn't make changes to the framework because if I was going to push those changes via Windows Update or something like that, I'm going to break you. Now, because it's a pull model from the developer, you can come pull from us whenever you want, and so we're not going to break you automatically. You can decide when you want to break yourself. You know, our goal is not to break stuff anyways, but we all know that sometimes one of the things I've learned is when I first joined the team years ago, I remember sitting in triage and we're like, oh, that's a bug. We should fix that. And then we started asking ourselves, if we fix that, how many people would we break?
Right.
So there's lots of bugs in the .NET framework and in ASP.NET today that we just can't fix because if you're taking a dependency on that, I break it, you're broken. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be something where you can pull. And that will allow us to fix more bugs than we can fix today.
And are we going to see semantic versioning kind of as a
right.
concept throughout?
Throughout the whole framework. Let's talk about performance. One of the things that we also care about a lot is runtime performance. And this is where the modularity of ASP.NET matters. Today, if you just want to write a simple application that answers on a socket, we're going to boot up all those objects you were talking about earlier, the server, cache, all those objects are going to get booted up every single request. With ASP.NET 5, we're going to give you the opportunity to actually opt into how much you want. If you just want a raw socket, I can save you $29K per request.
So dig into that a little bit more, like, because there's different levels of when you say web platform, like if you say I need a web framework,
yep.
What exactly do you need? Do you need, you know, drag and drop controls and view state and event management and web forms? Do you need MVC? Do you need something a little bit lower level like web API? Or do you just want to spit text out on a socket?
There's customers that want all varieties of that. There's teams inside of Microsoft that are building some really high-end applications. And what they want to do is they say, hey, for the admin pages where you go and set your options and stuff, I want to use MVC for that because I don't want to deal with that at the raw socket level. I want a framework to help me out.
Right, and dynamic data. You want a line of business web framework.
Right.
And those frameworks require layers of abstraction. And as such, the size of a request on the wire is going to have objects to support that.
Right.
Request, response, server, session, all that kind of stuff. But if you're just sending JSON as fast as you need to.
Exactly. Or you're doing video. You're doing video or JSON as fast as you want to.
Yeah, or image generation.
You don't want any of those other features anymore. You want those features to come away and give you the raw performance. And that's where if you've ever seen a Node.js perf test against ASP.NET and we don't come out very good, that's because they're testing a full framework against a raw socket.
I see.
And in the new world, we give you, the developer, all the capabilities you want. If you want to have half your app use MVC, part of your app use raw sockets, go for it. We'll optimize each of those paths, and you can run as much or as little, as much or little of the framework as you want to run.
So that takes that previous slide about modularity, which is from a composing at development time. You know, that's one aspect of modularity. But then at runtime, you're opting in and you're going to use it that much memory or that much.
Right. There's a file called startup.cs. And if you load that up in an ASP.NET 5 project, you'll see inside of there, there's do you want static files to be served? Do you want to have an error page? Do you want to run debugger release? You'll see basically you're opting in to every single feature. You could go to that file, uncomment everything, and you're basically running raw socket at that point. So we let you. The other cool part of that is, if you want to replace the error page in ASP.NET today, you can't because it's baked somewhere into system.web.
Yeah, I don't know where. The yellow screen of death.
The yellow screen
of death.
I
don't know where that is. Somewhere
in the new
piled
world,
in.
Because it's all modular, you could replace any component of this. You know, if you want to replace the error page, go for it. If you want to replace static file handling, wouldn't recommend that, but you could go for it. So it's giving you more choices as well.
Okay.
And then finally, one of our other topics here was developer productivity. And this is about what are the steps you have to do as a developer. Today it's kind of, I load my controller file up, I modify some code, I press the compile switch to compile, then I go refresh my browser. That's a cycle that you just do repeatedly. Now that compilation step is removed, meaning that you can save the file. And if you press like Control Alt Enter, that will actually then cause browser link to refresh your browser. And so you can just make a code change, press that key combination, your browser is going to refresh. And so the goal is to make that cycle faster and faster and faster. So the amount of time for making a change and seeing it in your browser, we can reduce that. Today on most machines, that's about 7 seconds. We're still not great in the betas and previews of ASP.NET 5. But our goal is to get that down into the 1 second range.
So if I understand correctly, today, you edit your CS file, you hit build, we load that source file up, the compiler does.
Yep.
It then compiles in memory and then emits out into the disk the binary, the DLLs, and then it picks those binaries back up again and loads them up.
It's actually worse than that. You save a file in Visual Studio, run the compiler, Visual Studio then opens a command prompt under hidden, runs the command line compiler, and tells it to take the output from the compile and put it in the temporary ASP.NET folder.
So before it gets in a bin, it's in another temp folder.
Yeah, well, some of it's running in a temp folder, exactly. And so there's all this disk I/O, and there's launching the compiler. We were doing some benchmarks before Roslyn, which is the new C# compiler, came out, and saying, what if you had to compile 1,000 files in ASP.NET? How long would that take? And it ends up taking about 102 seconds. With Roslyn, we're able to compile those directly to memory and not touch the disk. We have to touch the disk to read your files, but we don't have to save back to the disk. And we're not shelling out the compiler. We were able to do the same thing in like 3 seconds.
Okay. So the assumption is rather than going up and down, back and forth,
yes,
you just take the C# files, you load them into memory, and you emit into memory the assemblies.
Right. Run right out of memory.
What about, now that might freak some people out who are like, I don't want to distribute my source code. I don't want to go back to the old days of ASP.NET, of ASP rather, classic ASP. this is about development, not about necessarily deployment, right?
Exactly. If you want to deploy, we have tools that will actually take your application and build it into its own package as well. And you can basically distribute your entire pre-built application as a package ready to go. So it's choices. You could decide to deploy your application purely as binaries. You could decide to deploy your application as a combination of binaries and source code, which means if you want to go back to the live server and edit a single file, you can do that without having to repush the entire site up. So it's your choice of picking how much or how little you want to actually copy each time. Once again, this whole release is about giving the developers more and more choices.
Okay, and you said that it's not super performant in the preview, the early previews that people have right now.
Yeah, it's getting faster each preview. I think the next release we have, it'll take one of the first big steps. Mm-hmm. One of the things we identified early on was when you did some of these operations in Visual Studio, well, Visual Studio had to compile once for some of its IntelliSense and to check for errors, and then the runtime had to compile again when it actually ran in the browser, and we're trying to go optimize some of those steps out so we only compile once. So there's a variety of other optimizations outside of Roslyn that we're doing to make this faster.
Right, because in the new Visual Studio, there is a kind of compilation that's happening as you're typing to get IntelliSense.
IntelliSense is compiling on the fly just to give you syntax error and squiggles and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk about cloud next. You were mentioning earlier that a lot of folks just think lift and shift. You just move your application from one server to another server. The real benefits of the cloud are when you get into the kind of the PaaS model, the platform as a service. And that's where we manage the machine for you, which means patching, IIS settings, all that stuff is provided by us. This is Azure Websites. If you use Azure Websites, that's a feature we give you. What we want to do is we want to make ASP.NET really easy to use in this world. And what I mean by that is if you're on one of these platform as a service solutions, there's a bunch of cool features. In Azure Websites, I can say when the CPU of my website gets too busy, I want to move up and use two nodes or three nodes and keep moving up automatically. Mm-hmm. Today, if that happens, ASP.NET will typically break. And the reason is we have a couple of features. We have a feature called Session State, which gives you some session between requests. People typically use this to do things like a shopping cart. I'm on a page, I put something in the shopping cart. On my next page, I want to see the stuff still in the shopping cart. By default, session state is done in memory, which means as soon as you have more than one node.
Right, unless you have sticky sessions and what's called node affinity, you can accidentally switch back and forth, and sometimes you have a shopping cart and sometimes
you don't. Exactly. And by as I said, it's memory by default. In the cloud, you really want a cloud version of this that stores it somewhere else, either into a cache in the cloud or a SQL database in the cloud. So when you switch to ASP.NET from the memory one to the one that requires it to store it somewhere else, your objects have to become serializable. Well, that's a break. So your app could run perfectly in memory. You flip in the new provider to make it work in the cloud, and your app falls apart immediately. So one of the goals in vNext is to not always force those requirements. Always force serialization. So when you move and put the cloud provider in, it's seamless and it just works automatically. Another thing that we think about is configuration. Configuration is where you typically store your SQL connections and all that kind of stuff. Historically, in ASP.NET, we've been storing those in a file called webconfig. Well, if you have those things and you put them in webconfig, that's a weird situation. So typically, the IT people in your group want to own the production servers. They don't want to give you, the developer, those things. So where does that change happen today? In our new world, we actually have a new provider for configuration where you can use a combination of environment variables, JSON files, even an INI file. Our recommendation is to actually have your connection strings and stuff in your production in the cloud be done in environment variables. And as a developer, you would actually put your connection strings for your development server in webconfig, or not in webconfig, but in the config.json file. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is when your app is deployed to the cloud, the environment variables will override the stuff in the config file.
So you've got scoped configuration.
Exactly. You can actually order and say, I want to read the file first, then I'm going to override anything in the file with environment variables, mm-hmm. or you could even say, I want to override that with something in an INI file. So you can scope these things in a way that, my recommendation is all your production stuff, environment variables in the cloud, mm-hmm. development stuff in your config.json.
So then configuration doesn't become a code change, and a redeployment and
or,
things like that.
Or, you know, we created really scary features like XML transformations.
Yeah, in order to get around
to
the
get
lack
around
of
these problems because we didn't have these capabilities in the other stack.
So when we say cloud ready, this is almost like cloud aware.
Right.
So and then also it seems like the formalization of the idea that there is a development environment, there is a production environment, more formally than it is currently in ASP.NET.
Right. And then finally, you know, we're doing some other things as well. The frameworks were all built at different points in times, and so web forms had trace.axd if you want to go see how your page worked. That only really showed you what the payload of the page was. Mm-hmm. MVC had no tracing. Web API had awesome tracing that would show you where the request came in, how it got routed, how it found the controller, how it found the action, all those things.
It was pretty awesome tracing, and we want that everywhere.
We want it everywhere. And so ASP.NET 5 has that tracing throughout the entire stack. We started at the very bottom and built this tracing in.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was actually running an ASP.NET application from the command line, and then we'll see a demo of that a little bit later, and I just hit refresh to look at a hello world, I got tracing in at the command prompt. Like I got all this information about the route and the pages that were being
yes.
served. It was a little surprising.
If you just run it from the command line, you'll just see it dumping to the console as the app runs.
But I want that. As a developer, I want that context.
That's in Visual Studio as well, so it's not just a command prompt thing. If you're actually in Visual Studio, you'll see the same stuff.
Very cool.
And then one of our last points, which is I think the most exciting, is one of the things that I've heard from customers over the last couple of years is, hey, we have some data centers that are based on Linux, and we'd love to run your applications inside of those data centers. Or a cooler one is, I really like to try out ASP.NET or try out C#, but I'm on a Mac and I don't have access to Visual Studio. And so one of the most exciting things we're doing is we now have cross-platform ASP.NET. We'll run on Mac, Windows, and Linux, fully supported by Microsoft. That's what the .NET Core 5 that we talked about earlier is. The .NET Core 5 is this smaller version of the framework. That we actually are adding all these cross-platform capabilities to. We also fully open-sourced .NET Core 5. The source code is not all up on GitHub yet, but as we get further into the framework, you'll see the entire framework come up on GitHub, and you'll be able to build your own version of .NET Core 5 on a Windows, Mac, or Linux box.
Can you put this into a little bit of context? Now, we're recording this in December of 2014, so if you're watching this at some future date, go out there and see that things may have changed. But as of this date, what is the status of running ASP.NET 5 on Mac and Linux? And then what will it look like in the future?
Right now, if you want to run ASP.NET on Mac or Linux, you have to use Mono. Mm-hmm. Mono is an open source .NET implementation that's out there in the community. We support that today. Our team, or the Visual Studio and .NET teams, are building .NET Core 5, which is this smaller subset of the full framework, and that version of .NET is being made to be cross-platform. And so sometime early in 2015, that will come out. And when that comes out, that'll be our primary way of supporting cross-platform, not using Mono, but using .NET Core 5.
And then will there be some kind of reconciliation about like what's Mono and there's the Mono libraries? Will they start bringing frameworks that they've made into NuGet?
Yeah, the hope is that the Mono guys will actually start taking big pieces of .NET Core 5 for a future version of Mono. So they can now, because it's all open source, they can take our BCL libraries, they can take our compilers, they can take our jitters and garbage collectors, all of those things. I hope that what happens is we get all these things merged together, and Mono actually ends up being libraries being built on top of .NET Core 5.
So then we, Microsoft, would be the CLR and the jitter, and then Mono would be, you know, the things around that are, you know,
right.
Other optional, maybe alternative base class libraries and things like that.
Exactly.
So it's really about choice.
Yes. That'll take some time. Right now, Mono runs on some platforms that we don't support, like Xbox and PlayStation and stuff like that. But I think over time, hopefully Mono is going to contribute that back to .NET Core 5, and we'll get some of those capabilities from those guys.
So there will be a Microsoft-supported CLR on Mac, Windows, and Linux, and then Mono, of course, lives on the platforms that are not Mac, Windows, and Linux.
Right.
All right. That's very cool. Thank you, sir.
And so, you know, that's just an intro of why we're doing what we're doing, but there's a bunch of cool materials coming from the other guys today on the stack. I think it's really exciting. Please go download it. If you want to download it, you can go to www.asp.net/vnext. And up there, we've got a series of tutorials. You can download the preview version of Visual Studio. So all the things to get started are there. And
also the community stand-up. One of the things that we've been doing lately with the ASP.NET team is on Tuesdays, we will go on to Google Hangouts and YouTube, and we will stream live basically a stand-up, a scrum, what we're working on, what we've been doing with ASP.NET. And you can check out that playlist linked to from ASP.NET/vnext. And we'll be right back after this short break.